Let me read you part of the Easter story as recorded by Matthew, in chapter 28. Early on Sunday morning, as the new day was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went out to visit the tomb. Suddenly there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, rolled aside the stone, and sat on it. His face shone like lightning, and his clothing was as white as snow. The guards shook with fear when they saw him, and they fell into a dead faint. Then the angel spoke to the women. "Don't be afraid," he said. "I know you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He isn't here. He is risen from the dead, just as he said would happen. Come, see where his body was lying. And now, go quickly and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead, and he is going ahead of you to Galilee. You will see him there. Remember what I've told you." The women ran quickly from the tomb. They were very frightened, but also filled with great joy, and they rushed to give the disciples the angel's message. And as they went, Jesus met them and greeted them, and they ran to him, grasped his feet, and worshipped him.
So we've heard Cliff read that Easter story to us about that first Easter morning, and it got me thinking this week as I was hearing that story again, what would it have been like to be there on that first morning? Mary and Mary, the two Marys, had a front row seat to some incredible things that happened. If you remember back to Cliff's reading, first of all, there was an earthquake. Imagine being there when the earth shook. Then they saw this angel, and the Bible describes the angel as being like lightning, as being in bright white clothes, appearing, and the angel, they say, rolled the stone, that huge boulder, that huge stone that was in front of the tomb. The angel rolled it away. And I love the description how the angel then went and sat on top of the stone. And you can almost imagine the guards looking on, kind of going, what is going on? And the angel sits on the stone and looks at them and kind of says to them, you try moving that back, just try it. He was strong, he was powerful. Mary and Mary have seen all this. The guards faint. And then the angel looks at Mary and Mary and says to them, come and have a look in the tomb. And they go into the tomb. And the angel says those incredible words that are here on the screen. He has risen just as he said. He has risen just as he said. And then Mary and Mary kind of rush off to spread the news, to tell the rest of the disciples. On the way, they meet Jesus. And they have a conversation and they worship him. What a morning. And all this is just as the sun's coming up. They haven't really got into their day. I suspect they needed to sit down. They needed to rest after all of that stuff happening in just the first few moments of the day. But perhaps like a lot of us this Easter, I've been drawn to these words of the angel. He has risen just as he said. We put it on our Easter cards this year that the church have sent out. So I've been giving it a lot of thought. And it's an interesting statement that the angel makes, that Jesus said he was going to rise again. And Jesus did say that. If you read the stories of Jesus in the Gospels, in Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, Jesus said time and time again to anybody who would listen that he was going to come back to life. At least 9 times I counted in the Gospels, Jesus says this to different groups of people. At one point in Mark's Gospel, in Mark chapter 8, Jesus says this, I will suffer many things and be killed, and after 3 days I will rise again. In fact, if you've got time to read on a little bit in the story that Cliff read to us this morning, some of those people who were accusing Jesus, who wanted him executed, they're actually saying that. We remember how that imposter, how Jesus said, after 3 days, I will rise again. Jesus was well known for telling people that he would come back to life. So it makes sense that the angel said, he's alive, he's risen, just as he said he would do. But it's got me thinking as well this Easter, perhaps as I always do at Easter, did he really come back to life? Just because Jesus said he was going to come back to life, did that actually happen? Because that is an incredible thought to have, isn't it? That somebody who's been executed in a really horrible way, who's been in the tomb, in the ground for 3 days, could come back to life. Did that really happen? Well, what I want us to do, just for the next few moments, is to kind of become detectives. If you've got a magnifying glass somewhere, go and grab it now. Because we're going to do a little bit of detective work and have a look at some of the evidence. And you can have a think about it and you can weigh it up for yourself. Did Jesus really come back to life? Well, the first bit of evidence I want us to think about is the fact that there was an empty tomb on that first Easter morning. There wasn't a body in the tomb. This really well-guarded tomb by the Romans, this tomb that had this huge boulder, this huge stone in front of it, was empty. Jesus' body wasn't in there. Well, if we dig into it a little bit, I guess it doesn't necessarily mean that Jesus had come back to life. There could be another explanation for it. And one explanation that people have thought of is that perhaps the authorities took his body. Perhaps those people who were guarding it, the Romans, perhaps they decided, well, let's take Jesus' body out of the tomb. Well, yeah, that could have happened. That is possible. But when you think about it, over these next few days and weeks and months and indeed years, people started to say, Jesus has come to life. Jesus has come back to life. Now, if the authorities did have the body, they would have produced it, wouldn't they? As the disciples were going around saying, Jesus is alive, and people were getting excited about that, they would have gone, well, he's not, and here is his body. And that would have stopped any of that fuss, any of those rumours from happening. So it's pretty unlikely that the authorities took the body. Another explanation is maybe some robbers came and stole it. Now this was common in those days. When somebody was put in a tomb and they were buried, the robbers would go in and rob the tomb. But the bit they were trying to rob wasn't the body, it was the cloth that the body was wrapped in. That was expensive. That was worth some money. And if they cleaned it, they could sell it on for a lot of money. So, did robbers take Jesus' body? Did they rob his tomb? Well, this doesn't make sense either, because in the Gospels we read that Jesus' body had left the tomb, but left in the tomb were the cloths that his body was wrapped in. There's an incredible bit where it says that the bit that wrapped his body was there on the slab, and the bit that wrapped around his head was neatly folded up on the other side of the tomb. It's pretty unlikely that robbers broke into Jesus' tomb. If they did, they were the worst robbers ever, because they took the bit, his body, that wasn't worth that much. So the third idea that people have said is, well, maybe the disciples took the body. They had heard Jesus say time and time again that he was going to come back to life. They really wanted to believe this happened. So perhaps they broke into the tomb and took the body to pretend that Jesus had come back to life. Well, this is pretty unlikely as well, because the authorities knew that the disciples might possibly do this. Look at this bit from earlier on in Matthew's Gospel. It says this, this is the Pharisees speaking at this time. Sir, we remember what the deceiver, that's Jesus, once said while he was still alive. After 3 days I will rise from the dead. So we request that you seal the tomb until the third day. This will prevent his disciples from coming and stealing his body and then telling everyone he was raised from the dead. If that happens, we'll be worse off than we were at first. Pilate replied, take guards and secure it, that's the tomb, the best you can. So they sealed the tomb and posted guards to protect it. Can you see what's happening there? Can you see what's happening? The authorities knew that the disciples might try and break into the tomb. So they guarded it in a huge way. They put Roman soldiers outside of the tomb and they sealed it. There is no way that the disciples could have got past a battalion of Roman guards and stolen Jesus' body. It's an interesting thing to think about. How come there was an empty tomb? Second thing I want us quickly to think about is that there were many witnesses to Jesus coming back to life as well. You know, Jesus, after his resurrection, was on earth for nearly 6 weeks. And during that time, he appeared to loads of people. At one point, 500 people in one go. That is a lot of witnesses. Now, some people have said, well, maybe they were hallucinating. Maybe they were drunk and they just said that they saw Jesus. But do you know what? The experts say that the sheer number of people that Jesus appeared to make it really unlikely that they all could have been hallucinating at the same time. Maybe at one point or a couple of times, but over 6 weeks and to 500 people in one go. There were lots of witnesses to the fact that Jesus had come back to life. And the third thing is this, is that the disciples' lives were transformed once Jesus came back to life. You know, the disciples, Jesus' followers, the men and women, they were scared, they were frightened. Their leader had just been executed in a very public way. And the Bible tells us they all went into hiding. They were worried that they would be next to be crucified. Yet in the days following Jesus' resurrection, they were emboldened. They were passionate about what they had seen. And they went and spread the word to as many people as possible. They've said, we've seen Jesus. He is alive. And do you know what? Over the coming months and years, nearly every one of Jesus' disciples were killed because of what they believed. They were either executed, they were beheaded, they were tortured, they were treated terribly. If he hadn't really come back to life, if they didn't really believe what they had seen, any one of them could have said, no, I'm lying, I'm not telling the truth, and they would have saved their own lives. But they believed it so much, their lives were transformed to such an extent that it even cost them their own lives. And over the next 30 years, that message that Jesus had risen again spread like wildfire around the region and eventually around the world. And still today, millions and millions of people, myself included, have had their lives transformed by the truth that Jesus has risen, just as he said. The evidence is really strong. Listen, I'm going to pause here. And in a few moments I'm going to come back and we're going to have a think together about what this means for us today. But whilst I go and as the rest of the service unfolds, just think about those three pieces of evidence. The fact there was an empty tomb. The fact that many witnesses saw Jesus alive. And that lives have been transformed because of Jesus' resurrection. Which of those do you think is the strongest bit of evidence? What is the most convincing to you? And if that's true, what implications does that have then for your life? Great, so if you remember back, here are the three pieces of evidence for the resurrection that we've just thought about. An empty tomb, the many witnesses that saw Jesus come back to life, and the fact that his followers' lives were massively transformed by that piece of news. So, I asked you a question, if that's true, what difference does it make to your life? What difference does it make to my life today? Well, here's the thing. is that Jesus coming back to life, the new life that Jesus enjoyed on that first Easter morning, he then shares with each one of us. He doesn't just keep it to himself. He shares it with anyone who believes in him. Have a look at this verse with me from 1 Corinthians 6 verse 14. It says this: God honoured Jesus' body by raising it from the grave. He'll treat yours with the same resurrection power. That sounds good, doesn't it? That Jesus, that same power that raised Jesus from the dead, is then shared with you and with me. When we choose to believe in Jesus, when we put our trust in Jesus, when we say thank you to Jesus for taking the blame, taking the punishment for all those things we've done wrong, the stuff that the Bible calls sin, that on the Good Friday he became sin, he took all that stuff into his body, and he died in our place. And when he died, the power of sin died too. When we say thank you to Jesus for that and put our trust and believe in him, that same resurrection power is available to you and to me. And that means that you and I can enjoy new life today, right now. He breathes his resurrection power into our bodies and he transforms us. Some of you will know, because I've shared it before, that I became a Christian when I was 17. I was living in Billericay at the time, just down the road in Essex, and I was travelling each day into Southend, into Westcliff, to go to sixth form. And around about that time, around about Easter, in fact, I became a Christian. I put my trust and my belief in Jesus, and he transformed me from the inside out. Now, around that time, the people I was hanging out with and sharing my life with, we would do lots of different bits and pieces. And I remember I used to swear quite a lot. It was probably quite a lot of us today. It's part of my language. And so I'd tell jokes, or I'd just be talking about things, and I'd swear quite a bit. And I met Jesus that Easter, and I put my trust in him. He transformed me from the inside out. And do you know what? Almost overnight, I just stopped swearing. I didn't have to try. It wasn't something that I worked on. It's just something that God took away. And I remember really clearly getting the train into Southend one morning with some friends who were going to the college with me. And we were chatting away and talking, and I'd become a Christian. And one of them saying to me, "Oh, Mark, I want to say to you, do you know what? You don't swear anymore." I went, "Don't I? I hadn't even noticed myself." He said, "Yeah, you've stopped swearing." I remember just thinking, well, that's incredible. And I know that it's because Jesus gave me new life. He wanted to take that away. There's a great verse in the Bible that says, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Jesus had put his new life in my heart and had changed it. And so it changed the way that I spoke as well. That resurrection power, that new life. Where do you need to see new life in your life today? What in your life feels like it's dead? What feels like it's dying? Maybe it's a dream that you've had. Maybe it's a hope that you've had for how life would be. And you think, do you know what? That isn't the way things have turned out. And it feels like that hope, that dream has died. Maybe it's your work situation feels like it's dying. Maybe your health is deteriorating and you've lost hope for that. Maybe during this past year with the pandemic, your mental health has declined, your emotional health has declined, and it feels like it's dying. Maybe a relationship, maybe your marriage feels like it's dying. Now put your belief, put your trust in Jesus afresh today. Ask him to share his resurrection power, his new life with you. Allow him to breathe his new life into you today. It's new life for today, but it's new life for eternity as well. You know, trusting in Jesus, believing in Jesus, means that we never really die. His resurrection power, His new life that He shares with us, means that we don't have to die. Our soul lives on. What makes me really me, what makes you really you, can live on with Jesus forever. Perhaps like no other year, we've been confronted with the reality of death in 2020 and the start of 2021. I don't remember any other time in my life seeing daily reports of the number of people that have died from a particular illness until this past year. It's been shocking, hasn't it? We've become numb to it. Now, a recent survey I was reading says that 70% of people who are asked are scared of dying. 85% of people who are asked say that they are uncertain as to what happens when they die. You know, Jesus shares His resurrection power, His new life with us, so that we can know what happens when we die. So we can be certain, so we don't have to be afraid of what comes when we die. That sounds good, doesn't it? You know, Jesus, when He was alive on earth, says this: I am the resurrection, I am the life. Anyone who believes in Me will live even after they die. Death is not the end. Death doesn't have to have victory in our lives. Death doesn't have to win. As we put our belief and we put our trust in Jesus, He shares His new life with us, and that is eternal life. Jesus really is alive. Jesus' tomb really is empty, just as He said. And He wants to share His new life with you and with me. That new life brings hope for today. And as we sing in that famous hymn, bright hope for tomorrow. Bright hope for eternal life with Him, where there is no fear of death.